I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. If you thought Washington State's policies around homelessness were crazy already, buckle up. It's about to get a lot worse. Plus, a federal judge compares banning men from women's spaces to whites-only laws. And finally, proof that the media never really believed its rhetoric around President-elect Donald Trump. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. One step forward, 10 steps back. That about sums up Washington State politics. Cities like Seattle, where, gosh, you just think there's a little bit of sanity. It's like, okay, let's keep that going. And then, nope, 10 steps backwards. We're going to talk about that today on the issue of homelessness. We've been really spastic on this issue, where you have some wins, some people come around and say, okay, you're right, we can't just let homeless people set up drug dens in parks next to where kids play, like that's too far, and they'll reel it in a little bit. And then you got a city like Seattle that says, oh, okay, things are a little bit better, let's send a socialist down to Olympia to represent us and make laws for everyone else. So there's a little bit of, like, again, it's a little spastic. It's like we can't decide what we really want to do on these critical issues. And there are some cities that I'm proud of that have taken, you know, they're progressive. They have progressive leadership. But on issues like this, they have decided that they are not going to allow homeless camps to take over areas of the city that are supposed to support the city economically and are supposed to be areas for everyone to enjoy, like the city of Everett. You know, Everett has, so Mayor Cassie Franklin, she's a progressive, but I think they have finally realized, and she's taken a firm stance on public safety issues and decided, okay, I can be progressive, but we can also understand that our citizens deserve to feel safe, that we're not going to allow these public spaces to be taken over by the homeless, and we're going to instead try to get them into treatment. So the city of Everett just expanded its buffer zones for what's called no sit, no lie ordinances. There are some cities that have them. Seattle has one. Everett put one in place, and now Everett said, we're going to make it even bigger. So basically what the aim of the no sit, no lie ordinances are, it's like a buffer zone, is to say, okay, during these certain hours of the day, typically business hours or hours where people will be out dining and shopping, you can't sleep on the sidewalk. You can't set up shop for your fentanyl abuse on the sidewalk or in the alcove. And so essentially this no sit, no lie buffer zone is expanding outside of just kind of a core area of downtown to some other areas. The city of Seattle says it's a way to improve community safety, address encampments, encroaching city rights of way, and to mitigate negative activities in specific areas. And they said in that area, they'll have, you know, enforcement of it, but also they'll have outreach, et cetera, to try to say, okay, we're not just going to say move along. We're going to try to get you connected to services. So the this will include, so obviously the downtown area, also the area near the Imagine Children's Museum. Businesses are going to have no trespassing signs in their windows. And of course, you have the typical Stop the Sweeps activists who are like, this is just vilifying homelessness to say you can't sleep on a sidewalk. Where else are they supposed to go? But again, you have people who are offered services over and over and over and over and over and always say no. So what do you do when someone says no to help? Do you arrest them? Do you tell them to move along? Do you do both? Because essentially this is like a no trespassing thing. So where if you're sitting on a sidewalk, even if you're sleeping on the sidewalk or sitting there using fentanyl, that is an area of the city where you cannot do that during certain hours of the day. And so they can trespass you from that area where you're not allowed to come back. And so there are some homeless advocates who are saying you can't just prohibit homeless people from coming in certain areas of the city. But again, I would ask you, okay, what do you propose doing? If you have these areas that are supposed to be vibrant economic engines where people are supposed to live and work and visit and shop and whatever it is, or go to the children's museum, and you've got people there at all hours of the day abusing fentanyl out in the open on the sidewalk, and they don't, you don't want to move them, and they don't say yes to help, what do you suggest that they do? So I'm perfectly fine with things like this. But so that's the same. Remember I said one step forward, 10 steps backward. So you have some cities who are trying to do what they can to be able to, within court, you know, precedent and all that, to be able to deal with this really horrible homeless crisis that we have on our hands that gets worse and worse. But here's what's going to happen. The legislature is going to convene in the second week of January, and it is going to be a more ideologically driven legislature than ever before. And we know that, you know, Democrats didn't achieve a supermajority in the Senate or the House. However, the shift, the ideological makeup of the legislature went further to the left. You have two moderates who are no longer in the state Senate. They were critical votes and voices behind the scenes for sanity. They're gone. Don't have that anymore. As I said, Seattle sent a bona fide socialist, who, of course, is one of the stop the sweeps, you know, don't move them, don't do anything to the homeless, don't arrest drug users or whatever kind of people. And so there is a renewed effort. This is something that was first floated, I believe, in 2019. There is a new effort. Our friend Jason Rantz over at KTTH reported on this, from a Democratic lawmaker to push a bill that will make being homeless essentially a civil right. We're homeless individuals would then be a protected class of people. And if they are a protected class of people based on their status as being homeless, do you really think that any city, that any jurisdiction in the state would be able to tell them, oh, you can't camp there. You can't camp in the park where kids are supposed to play. Oh, you can't camp in the alcove of that business. Oh, you can't shoot up fentanyl and sleep on the street next to the Children's Museum in Everett. No, if they're a protected class of people, then that would be discrimination, right? Then it would be discrimination to tell them, can't camp here. Can't do your drugs here. That would be the death knell for the state of Washington if we are to make homelessness a protected class of people. As if that's anything near, like, the skin color you were born with, your sexual orientation, your gender. Oh, and whatever terrible life decisions you made to land yourself on the street. Like, that's protected too. Like, oh, you got addicted to drugs and you ended up living in a alleyway by Pike Place Market. Oh, poor you. Like, protected class of people. That's insane stuff. So this is being proposed. Jason Rantz got wind of this, that they're drafting this potential bill to introduce in the upcoming legislative session from Representative Mia Gregerson, who is a Democrat. Now, we know what this proposed bill that they're working on might look like. How do we know that? Well, Mia Gregerson introduced the exact same thing back in 2019. So we can just look at the House bill that she introduced at the time. House Bill 1591, which thankfully didn't pass back in 2019, or things would be even worse than they are now. It was relating to the rights of persons experiencing homelessness. It said cities throughout Washington are enacting and enforcing laws that criminally or civilly punish basic acts of survival, such as laws that result in people being criminally or civilly punished for doing what any person must do to survive. And it would implement an aspect of the law to protect against discrimination based on housing status. It would refer to any law, policy, or practice regulating public space that results in disparate treatment or has a disparate impact on people who are homeless or perceived as homeless, as defined in this section. And it said harassment would be anything knowingly or willfully course of conduct by law enforcement or public or private security personnel or agents directed at a specific person that a reasonable person would consider pestering, troubling, disturbing, or threatening. So think about that for a second. And again, this is going to look the exact same. Maybe a couple tweaks here and there, but she's already introduced this. She did it in 2019. We know exactly what that bill looks like. We can go back and look at it. So it looks like she's going to try to resurrect that, knowing that our state legislature has shifted ideologically to the left. And they are going to push a policy that says you cannot discriminate on anyone based on housing status, and you can't harass them, meaning law enforcement can't pester, trouble, disturb, or threaten them. Like, law enforcement's out threatening the homeless. But it would be for you and I either. Like, let's say we walk by a homeless person and they're shooting up drugs or doing something else unsavory, and you've got a kid and you're saying, hey, buddy, stop that. Is that threatening? Is that pestering the homeless? Would you not be able to do that? What would that entail? Like, we would all just have to be okay and not say anything. Not do anything, us or police or business owners, like the business owners we've talked to in Ballard, who've got people laid out in front of their alcove that literally customers would have to step over to get inside their establishment so the business owner couldn't say move along. because that person's now in a protected class of people? How, this is insane. How insane do you have to be to push policy like that? These are the people we send to Olympia to make laws for the rest of us. And I'm just going to say, I mean, buckle up, because this is about to get crazy, because the ideological makeup of the state legislature and the majorities, the strength of the majorities for Democrats, make it very possible that this could pass this legislative session. And I thought back and forth about, okay, how much are Democrats willing to test Bob Ferguson in his first year in office? You know, brand new governor, he ran on being a moderate, which is just bullshit. Ran on being a moderate, pro-public safety, we're going to deal with the homelessness issue and all of this. Would they be willing to test him by sending this bill to his desk for his signature? Because Bob would sign it. I have no doubt in my mind. He probably wouldn't want to have to be faced with that decision in his first year when he ran based off being a moderate to sign something as fringe as this into law. But he doesn't have the political will to veto it, to go against his party like that and to risk alienating the far left political base. So he'd have to sign it if it came to his desk. I want you to really understand how crazy this will be. Even the small, small steps that cities like Seattle and Everett have taken to try to take back their cities from the drug addicts and the criminals, even those small steps would be null and void. Not to mention other cities in the state who don't tolerate that crap, who haven't ever tolerated that crap, would now be forced to tolerate it. Because to not tolerate it would be discriminating on someone based on housing status by pestering, troubling, or disturbing them. Can't disturb them. Can't disturb the person putting a needle full of fentanyl in between their toes in the tent in Burien who's going to end up killing themselves. Can't disturb them. Can't disturb the people who are doing drugs outside the Children's Museum in Everett, scaring families away from attending. Oh, can't pester them. Can't trouble them to move and do their drugs somewhere else. Can't trouble them to get help. This will not only lead to, I mean, it will be the end of Washington State as we know it. I mean, it'll be completely overtaken by drug addicts, by homelessness. The homeless industrial complex will get even bigger. Our communities will get even less safe. Maybe this is it. We've been looking for something, right, that would wake people up finally after this election. We're the only state in the union to not go further to the right when it came to votes for Donald Trump and Republicans. Maybe this is it. We said, how bad do things have to get? What will it take for people to wake up and stop sending the same people back to Olympia who have made the homeless crisis worse, the crime crisis worse, the drug crisis worse, affordability worse, taxes higher, spending out of control? What will it take for people to wake up? This is probably it. So do we just say, do it? Do we just dare them to do it and say, let's go. Let's take a slide down to the bottom as fast as we can get there, because this will be it. If we want to get to rock bottom as fast as possible to try to get our state moving in the right direction, this will be it. So maybe we do that. Maybe we just say, yeah, pass the thing. And we don't use this show to push back against it and warn people about it. We just dare them to do it. Let him do it. Let Bob Ferguson sign it in his first year in office and see how fast the state plummets to San Francisco depths of despair. I'm tempted. Nicole? Should we just let it happen? I'm tempted.
Well, if it didn't, you know, if it didn't impact safety, then maybe. But I mean, it's scary.
But if
it's
the
scary
alternative
out there, and we got to live here.
100%. But if the mm-hmm. alternative is we spend 7 more years slowly getting down to the depths
right.
that San Francisco saw, and all the people who die of substance abuse and random acts of violence and the devastation it'll have to the economic engines of our entire state and in the cities and their tourism, mm-hmm. and we spend like 6 or 7 more years on top of the 15 years we've already spent in this slow decline, or we just say, let's go, let's buckle up, tip of the roller coaster, and just drop us.
Well, I'm not sure that
in a year
that we're going to stop them anyway. I think that's the goal, right?
Well, this is what they want to do. But again, I go to, and they've lost. There is maybe 2 moderate voices amongst the mm-hmm. whole Democratic establishment in the House and the Senate. Maybe 2. Who would vote against this? Maybe 6 or 7. But you don't know how bad that pressure is going to be behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And if they're willing to, I really don't think Bob Ferguson would want to sign this in his first year as fringe as he is,
mm-hmm.
because he knows that it's the antithesis of everything he promised on the campaign trail for the last 2 years. But if it gets to his desk, he will have to sign it. Guaranteed, he will not veto something like this. Yeah, because the progressives, housing is a human right crowd, will be all over his ass for the next 3 years.
Right, and he wants another term.
Yeah,
so
well, of course. He's already going to be real careful the first term.
Second term, I don't know.
Oh, no. Second year, everything's out the window.
You think?
Well, yeah. 100%. All the things, and I'm curious what you guys think about this. Do we let him do it? Do we not? And what I mean by it, they'll do it anyway. Right. But do we just sit back and watch it happen? And say, you know what, we're going to protect ourselves and our family. We're going to gear up for what we know the implications of this will be. Mm-hmm. And then we're just going to watch Seattle, Everett, Tacoma slide into the abyss faster than we've ever seen before. And we're going to hope that that is the thing that finally wakes the state up.
The problem that I see with that is that even now, I mean, there are places that are bad enough that should have got their attention.
Oh, I agree.
But nobody assigns blame where blame is due.
100%.
And that's what we need to keep pointing out to people. Like, this is because of this person, these lawmakers,
this bill.
These people are the problem.
I mean, this is nutty stuff.
Because I had that discussion with somebody during the election there. I said, what about homelessness? What about crime? That's everywhere.
Yeah. Can you just imagine? No. Put yourself in someone's head who thinks that homelessness should be a protected status.
That's a civil right.
That is not someone who's fit to be making laws for the rest of us. That's wild stuff. I'm wondering, I want to know if you guys feel the way I feel, which is this would send us to rock bottom. San Francisco levels within 2 years. So do you let it happen and see, because there's people deciding, do you want to move out of the state or not, right? Do you let it happen and see, okay, let's see what rock bottom looks like, and if people wake up, and if they don't wake up in the midterm elections or in 2028, then it's like, okay, it's unsalvageable. Or do you say, okay, let's fight back against this as we fight back against all the other bad and dangerous policies? Man, maybe I'm just like feeling a certain way today.
I think that would be a mass exodus. I mean, I think there already has been, but I think people would get the hell out of here.
Well, and one of the other things I'll say, and I'm kind of going on a tangent now, Bob Ferguson made all these promises when he was running for governor, right? Oh, we're going to spend $100 million hiring more police officers and giving it to local agencies. All those promises he made about public safety, where's the money going to come from? He is going to very conveniently say, Jay Inslee left me a $10 to $12 billion budget deficit, which we just learned about a few months ago. All this money they have, record revenue, bloated budget, doubled in size. About a month ago, we hear they might be facing a $5 billion budget deficit for the next 2 years. And then Jay Inslee comes out and acknowledges, yeah, it's going to be about $10 to $12 million for the next 4 years. How convenient. How convenient, right after people elect Bob Ferguson, maybe based on all these promises he's made about all these things he's going to do to make things better and make public safety better and hire more officers. Well, oh, I would do that. I would make good on all those promises, except, you know, not my fault, but, you know, Jay Inslee left me with a $10 to $12 billion budget deficit, so I would totally do those things. Absolutely meant it. But I can't, because now we have no money. So he's going to be able to get away with not making good on a single, you know, moderate campaign promise that he made, because he's going to say it's a budgetary issue, despite the fact that you already know, because he had a press conference about it 2 days after Donald Trump won the election, that he's going to spend an awful lot of money trying to do things like stock up on certain abortion medications, like Oregon just did, in advance of Donald Trump and Republicans having control of the House and the Senate and Congress and the White House. Oh, and you know that they're going to spend an awful lot of money suing the Trump administration. They'll find money to do all those things. But he's not going to be able to carve out the funds to make good on the promises he made to help make our communities more safe. And he'll probably sign this bill if it gets to his desk. You can already see where all this stuff is going. If you don't see the pieces falling into place, I can't help you. Because what did we say yesterday? The $10 to $12 billion budget deficit. Voters just declined to repeal the capital gains tax. So you already know the first thing they're going to do to make up for this massive budget deficit that they'll blame on other things, not their own misspending and mismanagement of funds. They'll say, well, our hands are really tied. And if we want to make good on some of these things that people really want, you know, the communities are really unsafe. They'll act like, okay, hold on. Now I'm onto something. I'm painting this whole picture for you. So they let public safety get horrible. Supported police defunding in 2020. Vilified law enforcement. For 2020, 2021, 2022, actually passed laws to hinder law enforcement, to prevent the officers we do have, which isn't very many, from keeping their communities safe, like the restrictions on police pursuits. And I said at the time that the only thing I could think of, the only reason I could think of that they were doing that is they want a populace that is completely dependent on government. And that they want to intentionally make us so desperate to feel safe in our communities that we'll come crawling back to them, begging them, please, please do something to make us safe again. We'll do anything. We'll agree to any new tax. We'll agree to any new tax, please. Make us feel safe again. And that's what they want. And now we've crawled back to the government to feel safe. We're so desperate because of what's happening in our communities that we'll give them more of our money, more of our money. And so then we have, now we're in this situation. Oh, well, okay, I know you gave us more of your money already, but now we've got a $10 to $12 billion budget deficit. So the only way we can make you feel more safe in your communities, the only way we can fix these things is if we reduce the threshold for capital gains. Sorry, I know we said, and we just convinced you to keep the capital gains tax because we said it only applies to a fraction of a percent of the population, only the richest of the rich, the Jeff Bezos types, but we're in a crunch and you said you're desperate to feel safe again. So now we're going to have to reduce the threshold for who has to pay a tax on capital gains. And it's no longer going to be the richest of the rich. It's not even just going to be the rich. It's going to be the upper middle class, the middle class. It's going to be anyone who goes to sell their home. That's exactly what's going to happen, people. That's exactly what is going to happen. And it's going to happen quicker than you even realize. Wild stuff. And then, of course, the homeless industrial complex is only going to grow because as homelessness gets worse, the homeless industrial complex grows. Every time we see an increase in homelessness, what happens? They ask you for more money. 2 years ago, it was Jay Inslee in his State of the State address coming out and saying, we need $4 billion for affordable housing because a lack of affordable housing is the single most significant contributor to our homeless crisis, which it's not. And he begged for more money, $4 billion again. Oh, you don't want this homelessness to be taken, what we did? You don't want homelessness to take over your communities and your parks and your public spaces and your right-of-ways? Well, we'll fix it for you, but you've got to give us more money. You've got to approve all these new taxes, right? And then you do, and then what happens? Well, homelessness just gets worse because they're never going to fix the problem because they get so much money because the problem exists. So you're going to, again, more money into the homeless industrial complex. People are so desperate. They're going to go to the government for help and solutions. And it's going to go to people like Reverend David Bloom, 82 years old. I don't know if you guys saw this headline. Seattle minister and homeless advocate charged in child sexual abuse image cases. David Bloom is one of the largest players in Washington State's homeless industrial complex. One of the most significant players in the homeless industrial complex, accused of possessing child pornography. Longtime American Baptist minister, Reverend David Bloom, 82 years old, helped found the Downtown Emergency Service Center, one of Seattle's largest homelessness service providers. He founded it in 1979. You know how much taxpayer money DESC has gotten? Hundreds of millions. I'm sure nobody could even put a price tag on it. Direct funds from taxpayers, direct support from the government, and support from related organizations, hundreds of millions of dollars. Says he served on its board until 1995, though he was never an employee. Bloom also served as the director of urban ministry of the Church Council of Greater Seattle. He continued advocacy work into his 80s. On March 7th, Microsoft notified the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children that a user had uploaded several illicit files to its database. According to charging documents, Seattle police detectives located Bloom using his IP address in June, then got a warrant to search his home in September. Detectives spoke to Bloom at his home on September 20th. He reportedly admitted to uploading the photos, which were described in graphic detail in the charges, and told detectives he'd been viewing child sexual abuse images for about 3 to 4 years. Bullshit. You don't just start viewing child sex abuse images at the age of 82. Give me a break. A detective reported that Bloom thanked the officers and thought they were holding an intervention for him. Didn't think he was going to get arrested. Spent about a day in jail before posting bond. The co-founder of one of the most significant aspects of the homeless industrial complex, the Downtown Emergency Service Center. And like, look, I get it that you're an organization just because you have one perverted employee doesn't mean that all your employees are bad apples. I'm not trying to say that. But man, we've had an awful lot of stories related to criminal conduct of people who are profiting quite a bit from the homeless industrial complex, from the climate industrial complex, from DEI. There's a story about the woman we never really talked about on our show because I think it happened like over a weekend and we were gone a couple days. And this is the woman who was the head of the program that helped, you know, keep kids out of trouble. You know, it was like one of those DEI funded programs where it's like, oh yeah, we're going to keep kids out of trouble and keep kids out of gang. Well, it turns out she was running a massive fentanyl trafficking ring. Yeah, I'm sure you were keeping kids out of trouble. Just insane. Just insane stuff. We're in for a real crazy few years. And I think it'll be probably the craziest legislative session of my career covering politics because Democrats are so emboldened. They are so emboldened. And they have purged the moderates from their ranks. And there are no voices of reason left in the Democratic caucus, in the House or the Senate. It's going to be bad, guys. It's going to be bad. I hate to freak you out, but that's my job. Let's see. We'll get to our segment, Unbelievable, coming up next. First, look, I know we got Thanksgiving coming up and then Christmas. And the last thing you're probably thinking about is that you want to embark on some sort of weight loss journey. And you're like, oh, I'll leave it to the new year. And then you're really not going to because I've been there. You're like, oh, new year, new me. And then it's the new year and it's the same you. So 2 years ago, I kind of felt the same way, but I gained a lot of weight during the pandemic and I'd been hearing commercials for Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. And so on November 1st, 2022, I was like, no, I'm just going to do it. Like I've been through a lot of Thanksgivings and Christmases. I'm just going to commit to it. It's not going to be the end of the world. And it wasn't. And I lost 30 pounds before the end of the year. So through Thanksgiving, through Christmas, managed to stick to the program, lost 40 pounds total, but most of that just in the first 2 months. So think about that. If you start now, you could be down 20 to 30 pounds by the new year. And then who needs a new year's resolution when you already took care of yours, right? So do what I did and what so many other Undivided viewers and listeners have done. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. You can just ask him about the program, see if it feels like it's something that would work for you. And then you can be on your way. And I'll tell you, like when you start to see the pounds come off so quickly, it really is a huge motivator to keep going. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. All right. So there is an important case going on right now involving the Olympus Spa and whether the Olympus Spa was within its rights to prevent a biological man from being in women's nude spaces in the spa. Well, if the comments from one of the judges on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that is now hearing this case is any indication, sanity is not going to win out. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. So a little bit of a refresher on this. We mentioned it a little bit on the show yesterday, but in the context of Antifa protesting some people who were meeting about this case. So there, the Olympus Spa, which Nicole, I forget, had you been to the Olympus Spa?
I have not.
No, been. But it's kind of like
it's just a bunch of hot tubs, pools.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
it's
the
like
spa
the thing
we go
to at Caesar's Palace, right? Where you kind of go in and you can be nude.
I think it's actually required.
That you're, you cannot wear clothes?
I believe that's part of the thing. That's
that would not be my jam.
Yeah, I know.
That would not be my jam. But anyway, so you're women and you want to, so when we go, we have the spa we go to when we're in Vegas and they have a men's and a women's side. The women go to the left, the men go to the right, and you can be in there and you can be all naked if you like and just, you know, soak it up. So it's a similar situation. So of course, when a biological dude wanted to use the women's spa at Olympus, there were women who were really uncomfortable with it. And it was a biological man. So they were like, I don't feel comfortable or safe. And I don't blame them. And Olympus Spa said, yeah, you can't use the women's side of things. So after that, he filed the state's Human Rights Commission issued a complaint of discrimination. So on his behalf in 2020, saying that it's a transgender woman, was denied service. So it's a human rights violation. And actually under Washington law, places of public accommodation are barred from restricting customers based on their gender identity. So the State Human Rights Commission thought they had a case here. And the spa sued, saying, no, we have a right. That commission is violating our religious and free speech rights. And so they sued in 2023. A federal judge dismissed their lawsuit. And then on appeal, the spa was arguing that the state's anti-discrimination laws on public accommodations inhibit its constitutional rights. So now, blah, blah, blah. Now you're caught up. The case is in the hands of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which had a hearing on Monday. I want you to listen to a comment by one of the judges on the Ninth Circuit, Mary Margaret McEwen, who is a Bill Clinton appointee. Enjoy.
What was the admission policy?
Only women, biological women, or transgender women who have had bottom surgery could enter the spa.
Right. So that's like the Supreme Court said in Fair, if you have a law that says white applicants only, this is biological women entrance only. It seems to me they're quite parallel there. And you can't have white people only can come into my restaurant. And then you say, well, no, that's really, we have a religious, spiritual nature to our restaurant.
That's a federal judge on the Ninth Circuit. Is there any doubt how they're going to rule? That's insane. She is saying that limiting a space to women only is like a whites only law. It's like a no colored people sign. That's mental. So you, by her logic, there are no spaces that could be only for women. None. By her logic, you would have to let men into every space that right now is specifically for women. Locker rooms, bathrooms, nude spas, you name it. I don't know, breastfeeding closets at the airport. What is it? You'd have to let, by that logic, if you're saying that a women's only space is akin to whites only, which is just, that's mental. You are saying there's no ability to have a safe space for women anywhere in this country. That is your assertion. I mean, I don't even know what to, because she's saying that, I mean, first of all, that's just stupid. I don't know why I'm trying to like explain her thought process because it makes no sense. But like, she's saying you could in essence say as a business, well, we're only going to serve whites because that aligns with my religion. These two things aren't parallel at all. And nobody's doing that. And no restaurants, no areas like that are saying women only. Like, it's not like you go to the coffee shop and they're like, this is a women's only space. That's not happening. You're talking about places where women are nude, where women are naked. And does the left no longer believe that women have a right to these spaces where they feel safe? Does the left really literally no longer believe in women's rights? Because that's what, I mean, it's so interesting how it comes full circle. It's like the left is like, we're the women's rights and feminists and all of this stuff. Like, unless a dude is involved who says they're a woman, then women's rights completely go out the window. Can you play, Nicole, that cut one more time? Because I think we all just need to bask in how insane it is that this is a federal judge on the Ninth Circuit.
What was the admission policy?
Only women, biological women, or transgender women who have had bottom surgery could enter the spa.
Right. So that's like the Supreme Court said in Fair, if you have a law that says white applicants only, this is biological women entrance only. It seems to me they're quite parallel there. And you can't have white people only can come into my restaurant. And then you say, well, no, that's really, we have a religious,
God, that's dumb,
spiritual nature to our restaurant.
And that's the woman on the court. That's the person who's supposed to be standing up for women to say, yeah, we shouldn't let men in women's spaces where they're nude. That's the woman. The two dudes next to her, I don't know how they feel about it, but they're kind of like, aren't you supposed to be standing up for the women? If you're not standing up for the women, who's standing up for the women? This is really crazy stuff, and that's what I mean of like this one step forward, 10 steps back. We were just saying on the show yesterday about how it really seems like some on the left are starting to let go of this radical gender ideology. They understand that that's part of the reason that some people have been turned off, including a lot of voters, Hispanic voters, black male voters have been turned off from the Democratic Party. And so I'm like, yeah, that's great. Love to hear some of these members of Congress finally saying like, yeah, I don't want men, running my daughters down on the soccer field, etc. And then you have someone like the Ninth Circuit Court Judge. I just got to read her name again. Judge Mary Margaret McEwen, who said, well, you can't protect women's spaces because that's like putting a big whites only sign outside the spa. I don't like name calling, but that's really stupid. I was going to say something else, but that is really dumb. It really is. Holy smokes. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next, including the fact that the media never believed its Trump rhetoric. Never did, and we have proof of that. First, coming up on 2 days, on Thursday, Zach Abraham and his team are having a Know Your Risk live webinar that's specifically going to focus on the results of the election. So, you're saving for retirement. Obviously, you've got your plans for retirement. You only get one retirement. The question is, are you putting it in needless risk by not having someone manage that money who is actively engaged in and looking at what's happening globally, nationally, and adjusting your retirement portfolio as necessary? Risk management is Bulwark's number one focus. So you'll learn about that on the live webinar, but you can also just ask questions about, hey, you know, what does a Donald Trump presidency mean for my retirement portfolio, which is going to be particularly relevant if you're getting close to retirement. I mean, obviously, you know, people go through ups and downs and different presidents and stuff when you're saving for retirement, but those last years are really critical. So if you're kind of wondering, what does all of this mean for me? Zach Abraham and his team can give you their thoughts on that. You only get one retirement. You do not want to put it at risk. So don't miss Zach's in-depth retirement portfolio free live webinar coming up Thursday. That's November 21st at 3:30 p.m. You can sign up totally free, knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Truck Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. Any references to performance of securities are thought to be materially accurate and actual performances may differ. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Truck 24308. Okay, I've just got to talk about this because it really, so we, it was like a couple weeks or a week ago or so ago on the show, when Donald Trump met with Joe Biden at the White House. And Nicole and I were both like, oh, that was really nice because they sat there, they had a cordial conversation. It was sort of a nice change of pace. But after we did that segment, I was sort of like, you know what? Wait a second. That's not nice. Like, Joe Biden was trying to convince Americans that Donald Trump was literally Hitler and was a fascist and was going to destroy our country. And so did Kamala Harris, like was trying to convince Americans that Donald Trump is an existential threat to our country. Then the election's over and they're like, oh, everything's good. It's just they never really believed that, right? It just shows the extent to which they're willing to try to scare the American people into keeping them in power. So no, I don't, now I take it all back. Now Joe Biden's sitting there like, everything's great. Like, this is gonna be a peaceful transfer of power. If he really thought Donald Trump was the next coming of Hitler, he wouldn't be sitting there with him. He would still be holding press conferences saying that we're about to swear Hitler into office, like America needs to get ready. And the same thing with the news media. They never believed the rhetoric that they were spewing about Donald Trump. And I'll point to Morning Joe. So the team at Morning Joe, here's a little clip of just a little taste of the kind of rhetoric they had about Donald Trump before the election.
You've always had this fascist talk coming from him. And now we're just going full on Hitler.
Yep, fascist, full-on Hitler. They'd say stuff like that about President Trump all the time. Well, apparently they can't have really meant it because they just went down to Mar-a-Lago to have lunch with him. They talked about it on the show.
Joe and I went to Mar-a-Lago to meet personally with President-elect Trump. It was the first time we have seen him in 7 years. And for those asking why we would go speak to the president-elect during such fraught times, especially between us, I guess I would ask back, why wouldn't we?
Because you called him Hitler and you said over and over that he was a fascist who would be an existential threat to our country. But now that the election's over, it's like you can break bread with him? So there's people on the left who are losing it at Morning Joe, like Morning Joe fans who are like, how could you? This is a betrayal. And I gotta say, I actually agree with them. I think there's cause for both sides to criticize what they did in going down to meet with Donald Trump. For me, it just shows the absolute, again, lengths they were willing to go to try to keep Democrats in power, that they would try to use their platform as members of the media, something as powerful as that, to spew lies about Donald Trump like he was Hitler and a fascist. And then after it's all done, they're like, oh, let's go have lunch with our old buddy Donald. Because remember, they were both friends with him before he became president. And even in his first term, he came on Morning Joe all the time. And so there's that side. But I honestly agree with the people on the left who are losing it. Because they were led to believe by these two people that this man was so bad, so scary, literally Hitler. And then they get on their show and we're like, we went down and had lunch with him. All right, here's another clip of that conversation.
Joe and I realize it's time to do something different. And that starts with not only talking about Donald Trump, but also talking with him.
You just now realized it's time to do something different? That maybe like all the hateful fear-mongering you engaged in for the last 8 years, you just now woke up? Or maybe you realized it's time to do something different because your ratings are plummeting. And because you realize that more voters decided that Donald Trump was good for the country than bad for the country. So you're worried about ratings, you're worried about advertising. I mean, or maybe you really woke up. Maybe it was like, wow, we went off the deep end. Like, that's fine, but people are still going to criticize you for it because you had very obviously gone off the deep end. Republicans and people in Trump's corner have been saying that for years and years and years, and you chose not to listen. And then it's like, all of a sudden, oh, you've woken up. You no longer think he's like Hitler. You no longer think he's a fascist since you're going to go down and have coffee and sandwiches. It's just wild stuff. One time, the one time I think since the election, I've genuinely agreed with the far left TDS crowd about something. It's this. All right. So this is something interesting happening in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. So I've said that we need to make sure that any instances of actual voter fraud or voter integrity issues are getting attention, that they're taken seriously. And there is a genuine, honest to God example in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. So there is a commissioner there, Diane Ellis Marseglia. Were you going to correct my pronunciation? Oh, you were looking like you had a, okay. Diane Ellis Marseglia. And she just came right out and said, yes, we are going to count illegal votes, ballots that don't have signatures, and I really don't care what people think about it.
I think we all know that precedent by a court doesn't matter anymore in this country, and people violate laws anytime they want. So for me, if I violate this law, it's because I want a court to pay attention to it.
People violate laws anytime they want. Literally, not even hiding it. Just an absolute... we're going to do it. People violate laws all the time. So I'm going to violate this law. And it has to do with the Senate race there. I mean, the Republican is winning and it doesn't sound like there's enough of these illegal ballots to be able to make a difference. But she just comes right out and says, I'm going to count ballots that the law says I cannot count. One thing I'm proud of here, the mainstream news, old media is talking about this. And how could you not? It's so out in the open, right? And the governor of Pennsylvania has condemned this. Let's get to CNN first. Jake Tapper had on John Fetterman.
What's your take? What's your response to that Democratic official deliberately announcing that they're going to defy court orders and count these provisional ballots?
Well, I'm not going to chase every kinds of quotes, things like that, because I think you just pointed out that it refers to about 115 ballots, and that's not going to have an impact on this race at this point.
Does it matter? John Fetterman, you were doing so well. You were doing so well. Why would you not say, yeah, you can't do that? That seems like something John Fetterman would be willing to speak up about, but, oh, it's okay. It's only 115. I ain't going to count those ones. Now, I am proud of Josh Shapiro, and I like the governor of Pennsylvania. I think he is someone who is moderate and reasonable most of the time when it's not in an election cycle. And I appreciate that. And I think he's been good at calling balls and strikes. I really started to like him after the assassination attempt in Butler, Pennsylvania on Donald Trump, because I thought the press conference we played part of it on the show that he gave was really completely absent politics, you know, as a Democrat who was supporting Kamala Harris or Joe Biden, I think at the time. Yeah. Was very, very, it just showed good, true leadership. And I think he's showing true leadership here. He sent out a long statement, much better than the statement John Fetterman just gave CNN. I'm not going to read the full thing, but it says, as I've made clear for years, every eligible Pennsylvanian's vote should be counted in every race. And thanks to the hard work of Republican and Democratic election officials all across the Commonwealth, Pennsylvania has held another free, fair, safe, and secure election. And then it says, as counties continued counting ballots from the 2024 general election and a mandatory statewide recount begins in the U.S. Senate race, they were confronted with a lack of legal clarity surrounding undated mail-in ballots and caused significant confusion and put counties in a challenging legal position. Both my predecessor and I have repeatedly called on lawmakers to give greater clarity on mail-in voting, and due to certain legislative actors refusing to act on critical election reforms, this issue had been left up to the courts. Given this lack of clarity, county officials in each of our 67 counties were damned if they did and damned if they didn't, likely facing legal action no matter which decision they made on counting. But then he goes on, so he's saying, like, they were put in this position, but then he says this: as we move forward, I want to be clear. Any insinuation that our laws can be ignored or do not matter is irresponsible and does damage to faith in our electoral process. The rule of law matters in this Commonwealth, and as I have always said, it is critical for counties and officials in both parties to respect it with both their rhetoric and their actions. And that's key there. Any insinuation, like this woman said, that their voting laws can just on a whim be ignored is absolutely ridiculous. Now, if there is an issue with a lack of clarity, that is something that legally the legislature needs to take care of moving forward for elections. But it doesn't give some commissioner on a board in Bucks County the right to just say, nope, I have decided that I am the arbitrator of law and I'm going to count whether it's a mail-in ballot that the date of receipt uncertain or lacking a signature or whatever it is. So I'm glad this is like leadership, right? And I don't agree with everything Josh Shapiro says or does, but either you know, there are some leaders who I think if Republican had said something like that, they would be all over it. We see this in our state, right? But if a Democrat said something like that, like, oh, no big deal. I mean, we saw all the attacks on our democratic process in Washington, where Democrats harassed lawful signature gatherers, put out tip lines to report lawful signature gatherers, engaged in lawfare to keep initiatives off the ballot, bribed voters with their own money via energy credits. And Democrats were silent on that, like attacks on our democracy from the left. Totally cool. Had Republicans done any one of those things, they would have lost their ever-loving minds. So I do appreciate a little bit of moral clarity when we see it. All right, we're going to get to our daily subscriber show poll, which is a saucy one today. Saucy. Questions, comments, or closing sanity check. First, I've encouraged you guys to do the First Mark Challenge. This is really one of those things where, man, it is such a no-brainer. We all need insurance. And the question is, if you're handling your insurance on your own, why? When you have someone like First Mark Insurance, been doing this for a long time as an insurance broker in our area, and they can handle all of the work for you, and they can do it totally free. And you never pay First Mark Insurance anything for their services. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. We get nonstop success stories, First Mark Challenge victories from our, is this a new one, Nicole? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. We got another one. Karina says, hello, Brandy, Nicole, and team. I wanted to let you all know that I reached out to First Mark to see if I could get a lower premium for my car insurance. I worked with Brad. People work with Brad a lot from Undivided. Mm. Brad's just doing the Lord's work. He says, I worked with Brad, who called me the same day I submitted for help. Brad reviewed our policy and emailed me to tell me to stay put with our current insurance. I appreciate Brad's candor on this matter and will definitely reach out to First Mark when my next renewal comes up. And that's the key. Like, we get emails all the time from Undivided viewers and listeners who say, hey, I reached out to First Mark. They reviewed everything and they said, you actually did a good job and you've got the best insurance. And I don't think that we can find you better insurance than that. So stay with it. Like, that is the sign of a good, honest business. And we love that. And sometimes in other instances, like we had, I think it was Michelle who emailed us and said First Mark was able to save them 50% after they got a crazy renewal notice on their insurance. And that really mattered to their family. So just do it, guys. Take the First Mark Challenge today. You just got to set aside a little time. So FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right. I'm very curious to see what you guys have to say on our daily subscriber show poll. I want to ask you on the immigration issue, because I really think this is going to be the fundamental sort of sticking point between our state and the Trump administration, is this issue of sanctuary policies. If Trump goes out and he does conduct some sort of mass deportation effort, the extent to which states like ours and other very blue states are going to try to thwart those efforts. So I ask subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, do you support the deportation of illegal immigrants who have otherwise committed no new law violations while inside the U.S.? Nicole, what say you? You are a subscriber, after all.
I am, right. I support
Say it, Nicole.
Enforcing Say it. Our laws.
Say it.
I support enforcing our laws. Yes.
Okay. Nicole's a yes. I was like, say it, girl.
I mean, if they have a legitimate reason to be here, then give them a pathway. Sure. But
well, that's an asylee. Are here on an illegal asylum or you have an asylum case right. pending, that's different. That's not you're not an exactly. illegal immigrant.
Well, I mean, but maybe you didn't go about it the right way, but.
But if they gave it to you nonetheless, you're a legal immigrant until right. they say otherwise, or maybe your asylum claim is denied. So let's see here. Let's start on Patreon. Patreon and locals, you guys are very similar. 80% or so saying, yeah, I do. Remove them from the country.
I just don't know how else we maintain
law and order and rules. Yeah. And for the people who do come here, yeah, across the board, very similar. About 80% on X. About 20% no. Chris said, hell yes, like every other conservative, I'm a fan of Ron's, but one of his greatest mistakes was granting amnesty to all the legals. Oh, I was like, Ron who? I was like, Ronald Reagan. But one of his greatest mistakes was granting amnesty to all the illegals in 1986. The bad orange man won't make the same mistake. You're out of here. Nicole, can you mute my mics for a sec so I can sneeze?
Yeah. You're not sneezing. Still muted.
Mute me. It didn't happen for me. I had to sneeze and now I just didn't. Rick Albers, I said yes, but with some reservations. Someone in an earlier post used the word triage. That's what should be done in every case, with the priority, of course, to identify and rapidly remove criminals, those with a criminal background, anyone with ties to terrorists and the like. As far as those who have entered illegally but have been otherwise law-abiding or have a legitimate tie to the country, evaluate their situation thoroughly before a decision to deport or not is made. Very nuanced, Rick. Very nuanced. I like it. Donald Shaw says, we have laws and procedures to come into this country that should be followed. There will have to be exceptions made for necessary workers. The undocumented immigration will be reduced greatly once it is realized that it is no longer tolerated. And I am very much in support of a self-deportation amnesty. Yes. It doesn't sound like Tom Homan or the Trump administration have agreed upon doing something like that. But I definitely am in support of, hey, if you self-deport, leave the country, try to come back the legal way. We won't hold it over your head that you were in the country illegally, but you got to make good on taxes. Maybe you got to pay a fine. You're going to go to the back of the line, something like that. Because it doesn't mean they're going to get in, but I think having a sizable portion that self-deports in the hope of being able to be an American citizen one day will make things much easier and much less controversial. Because if they leave on their own versus someone prying them out of their house, then that's a much different thing from an optics perspective.
It's tough. I mean, like Bob Larson just said, 40% of our labor on farms and ranches are undocumented immigrants. What do you think would happen if they're suddenly gone? There needs to be an answer for them.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that you can legally come to this country to work. There are work permits, et cetera. And so we need to make sure that those are streamlined, fast-tracked, that it's easier, there's less regulation, because we do rely on that workforce and that seasonal workforce. So it has to be easier to come here legally to work, to go to school, as long as you've been vetted and you're returning when you need to return, et cetera. And then that's the whole thing, is if you stop the hemorrhaging, and then you speed up the process by which people can come here legally the right way. That's where like everyone agrees we should do, but no one seems willing to actually make it happen, because immigration is always the political football. Bill Coates says, who's going to support them? Our tax dollars? Yeah. Yes, Bill. Well, in fact, that is what is happening. Yeah. Tammy T says they should leave now on their own and return using a legal path. Man, I'm just going to sneeze, but it's okay. It's fine. Something's tickling my nose. Weiss Castle, it's sad, but the system has fallen apart. The only way to restore it is to start with a no exceptions policy. Hopefully Congress will act to create a workable system with reasonable expectations. It is really going to be a fight. As soon as the Trump administration goes after sanctuary jurisdictions and tries to prevent federal funding, we already see this. California has said, I think Colorado, some other states, like they will fight the Trump administration tooth and nail. So we'll see what happens. And certainly if you've got the feds working within the borders of our state and the state doesn't want them to be there working to get illegal immigrants out of the country, I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be an eventful few years for sure. All right. Questions and comments. Matt Gilbert, $10 super chat. Everyone should wish Matthew Cook a happy birthday. It was Saturday. A donation has been made in your name to the Human Fund. What's the Human Fund?
I think that is a Seinfeld reference.
Oh, okay.
It's if you continue reading.
Shows what I know. That's all. That's all. Hashtag money for people.
Yeah, so a human club, the hashtag money for people club.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, happy birthday to you.
Wait, did you want to read the next comment first before you sing?
Slow Nomo, I'll pay if we can prevent Brandy from singing. That is so rude.
Whoops.
Everyone's entitled to a happy birthday from me. Now I'm singing just because you said that. What's wrong with my singing?
I mean, they didn't pay. Slow-mo didn't pay.
Yeah. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, belated dear Matthew Cook.
That's not bad.
Happy birthday to you. Great. Slow no mole. Get lost. Don't get lost. We love you, but...
Wait, don't get lost.
Don't get lost. Diana Manning, hello all. Boy, did I have a difficult weekend. Just got back from visiting my rabid left sister in Denver. It actually turned heated, and I walked out for the rest of that evening. I've never done that before. It has just been ridiculous. Normally intelligent people just going crazy. Oh, that's so frustrating. But
that is wild.
I mean, look at the story yesterday with the 82-year-old teacher who's like, what was I supposed to do? Nobody listened to me, so I punched a Trump supporter in the face. Oh, my God.
Walk away.
Touch grass. Take a deep breath. Krista, happy Tuesday, everyone. Glad to have a normal timed live show to watch while I'm doing my baking. Yeah. I was so off yesterday, and then I had such trouble getting out of bed today just because, like, we moved our show to evening yesterday. Floyd Murrell, wish you would run for office. God, that would be depressing. You know, I've thought about it, right? I've thought about this and floated ideas and whatever it is. First of all, I love the job we're doing. And I do think there would be a huge vacuum if we stopped doing this to do that. And it's like being inside and in the how the sausage is made this last election cycle. It's like, can you imagine doing that full time and giving up this fun job?
Right.
It's like soul sucking. And also this machine and the system, because one of the things that stops me, right, is first of all, just to be frank, and I've talked about this on a subscriber Q&A before, I have really developed a lot personally over the last 5 years. I mean, I really have a lot of different beliefs and values than I did even 5 years ago. I mean, I'm 36 years old. And so I don't really think that that's necessarily fair, as I'm still forming all my beliefs on things. And I mean, I just came around to Donald Trump for the first time to run. And then God only knows where I'll be in 2 years, you know, as all this stuff is happening. I think I'm getting a firmer hold on, you know, what my value system is, how I want the government to operate, what I want the government to prioritize. But there's just a reality of being, I think, 36 years old and being willing to learn and grow and all of those things. And then the other thing is, I would never run with a party. And I don't know that the system is designed to support an independent candidate from the perspective of all the things you need to run a successful campaign. So those are some things I think.
Yeah, but I think it is getting there in this state. Not, I don't think the country can handle it yet.
Yeah.
But this state, I mean, people are hungry for the middle. And neither side is providing them the support, I guess. They don't feel supported by either.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Because Bob Ferguson won, and he's not in the middle, and Dave Reichert's far closer to the middle than Bob Ferguson.
They only had two choices. They only had left or right. They didn't have somebody in the middle. And had Mark Mullett been there, maybe he would not have won.
Well, yeah, but they had him in the middle. They had him as an option in the middle, and he only got 11 or 6% of the vote.
But that's because the rest of them went to Reichert, right? So if you would have, I mean, Mark had made this point with us many times, but had it been him and Bob,
he would have won
in a landslide, because he could have got this chunk of people on the right and then a lot of the left. A lot of the left, but like I said, I think they're mostly middle. I think they're independent, middle, and they just want... I think they're lost, and they just pick one side or the other, and they're and whatever.
But I mean, what I'm trying to say is, you said people are hungry for the middle. They did have an option. They had a more moderate candidate. Now, I wonder if it would have been different had he run as an independent. And people didn't really know Mark. I thought Mark Mullett should have run as an independent. And I wonder if the results would have been different if he would have got more or less votes had he run as an independent.
I think the right really wanted Dave. I think we were really passionate about
or
Dave.
Semi. Some on the right really wanted Dave.
Well, the far right wanted Semi. But I mean, I think there was more that wanted Dave. I don't know. It's just this mix, and it's like they would have to come to this agreement, like all of these independents and all these people in the middle would have to come to this agreement, like we're gonna go for this independent candidate or somebody more moderate listed as a Dem or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But it's all about messaging and
it's about
who's
messaging
put in front of you.
It is about name recognition. It's about the ability to raise money. It's about the ability to get people excited and all of that.
Mark
and
I'll didn't have the name recognition.
No, and people who are involved in politics know who Mark is, but that is a thing.
That's small.
It costs $10 million to get the amount of name recognition that you would need to be able to have people fill in a circle for you. Mm-hmm. So let's say this, just to instill fear in Bob Ferguson.
Oh.
2028 isn't very long away, Bob. So get your shit together, or you might not be ready for a campaign against me. That would be a lot of fun.
You know, it'd be fun just to come in at the end, like come in right at the end, not do the 2-year buildup. Oh, terrible. Too long. Too much campaigning. But to come in right before the primary and be like, oh, by the way, I'm running. See what happens.
Yeah.
I think we're campaigning right now. Like, what? Well, I mean, you know what I mean? Getting out there, letting people know what your site is.
Oh, yeah. Our whole life is a campaign, in essence, except not raising money, although we raise money from subscribers. Right. But yeah, maybe I'll just to put the fear of God in Bob Ferguson, because it would be so much fun just to troll him on the campaign trail. I'll say that I'm considering a run for governor in 2028. Mm-hmm. Bob. Do with that what you will. Okay, let me see. Baron of Gray Matter, $5 super chat. You informed folks probably know, but we are in for some heavy weather starting this evening. High winds, heavy rain, and possible snow. Yeah, and the epicenter is like my house. It's like, I told my husband, I'm like, clear the deck. Like, get the branches down. I'm glad we got rid of, it's supposed to be like 70 mile an hour up to 70 mile an hour winds or something. And we always lose power anyway. Even the slightest windstorm, it's always like out of power. So as long as my coffee machine can be hooked up to the generator, I'm good. I told my husband, I said, get ready to lose power. And he goes, I'm not even kidding. I'm calling him on the way home. You got to get everything ready to lose power and like get geared up. He's like, I'm always ready to lose power. Because he's such a man. He's such a man. He's got all his stuff ready. He's good to go. He knows.
He's a man, but he's just Mike.
He's Mike. He's a man. He's very prepared. He's got all his things. And there's nothing that man loves more than firing up his generator, right? Find you a man who will take care of you when the power goes out. Sandy Johnson Fleck, I understand Nicole's point of not wanting people to suffer at the hands of the homeless crisis, but I believe to let it happen would be best. Oh, in terms of letting them just make things even worse. No one wants to get better unless there is a certain amount of pain. And there is, I think it's a matter of, do you want the pain spread out over 7 years or do you want it confined to 2 years? And the same amount of people suffer pain. It's just at a more rapid pace. Baron of Gray Matter, $2 super chat. Washington is the North Korea of the USA. The Reaper Not Sun, wrong. Super chat. Wastate is the political version of Groundhog's Day. A lot of ZDS. You mispronounced Ninth Circus. Yeah, the Ninth Circus Court of Appeals. And then the Reaper Sun added, ask that judge if she'd be okay with sharing a shower with a penis that isn't her husband's, if she has one.
It's just weird. I don't think they put themselves in other people's positions
not
at all.
Unless because it this absolutely is a Korean, impacts them.
Specifically, it's a Korean spa.
Yeah.
It's a Korean tradition. Yeah. And then they're also Christian. And they're like, so it's not about being picky or not agreeing with trans people. It's about like, this isn't what we believe in. This isn't what this is.
And it's also respect. That's a really good point, which is it's not so much about like, oh, this person's a danger to me. It's like, I'm married. I'm not going to go sit in the spa next to a naked man who's not my husband. Mm-hmm. Like, so that makes it so that that spa is not an option for me anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's not fair. So that judge is nuts. Jack Hartstock with just a $1.99 super chat. Was that so I didn't sing Happy Birthday?
I think
birthday?
It was his first super chat.
Oh, great. Oh, no, that's not Jack's first super chat, was it?
There was a little, was balloons next to it. Normally that's what that means. But
Jerry with $10 super chat. Does the Tattletale Hotline go live in January of 2025? Oh, the hate crime hotline. Yeah. Bob Ferguson's hate crime hotline. Which all they're going to use that for. So he created this hate crime hotline, which like, yeah, in theory, if there's a hate crime like the one against Gina Powell, where she's punched in the face for being a Trump supporter with brown skin. But all they're going to use that for is to come out and say that hate crimes are up. That's all they're going to use it for, and as a way to get money, right? Because if there's a hate crime hotline and more people are calling it and reporting like microaggressions that they suffered, that they are calling a hate crime, because there's no legal standard, because this isn't a hotline where police go out and investigate. They'll ask you, do you want us to contact police? It's just for people to call and complain about microaggressions in their life. And then Bob, that's really what it is. Because it's not they're not meeting the legal definition of a hate crime.
No, they're just going to make polls and they're just going to make stats out of it.
And they're going to say hate crime has skyrocketed.
They're all hateful and evil people.
Yep. Hate crime is skyrocketed. Baron of Grey Matter says, I'm a bigot because I don't want to sit in a spa next to a naked man who's not my husband. Makes me a bigot. Well, if the shoe fits, I guess. Like I always say, like if it's right wing to want lower taxes for the middle class and to want the streets to be safe and not littered with drug users, if that's right wing, sign me up. If I'm a bigot because I don't want to sit in a spa next to a naked dude who's not my husband, sign me up. But see, then I'm a right-wing bigot. See, that's the problem about running for governor is that they'll have so many gems where it's like, it's just a commercial with me being like, I'm a right-wing bigot. this ad is paid for by Bob Ferguson for governor. It's so easy.
You would make it easy. But I think maybe some people would get some entertainment out of that.
Maybe. I don't know. Who knows? Yeah. What am I doing? Okay. Before we get to a closing sanity check, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. There's a lot of real estate agents out there, but Wes Jones has been doing this for a long time. He's been through all the ups and downs in the market. He knows the market like the back of his hand, and he knows how to get your home sold. That's what he did for Mike Boggs, who is retiring from the Seattle Police Department after 30 years, selling his home and moving to Arizona.
So the concerns were, is it presentable enough to sell quickly to get the price we want? Wes came out and met with us, and we told him what our concerns were. And he mentioned the concierge service, and we did take advantage of it. It was such an easy process. Wes is a really great guy, and his team is amazing, and the communication is great. So the whole process was great.
Yeah, and Wes Listing Boost Concierge Service is such a cool feature where if you need some cosmetic upgrades to your home, he can help manage all those projects. You don't have to sweat about it, but he can also help you pay for it up front, which is a really, really good feature to offer. So sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, today in our closing sanity check, Charles Barkley joins what I think is a slowly growing number of Democrats who are actually willing to look themselves in the mirror to understand why Donald Trump won. Let's get to it. All right, so Charles Barkley, he voted for Kamala Harris, so he certainly has a right to speak out on this. He was on, what is this called? The steam room.
I like
the set because they look like they're in a steam room. There's like towels hanging behind him, so that's kind of creative. Anyway, he shared this sentiment that Democrats really need to understand why they lost to Donald Trump.
And I just want to say this to the Democrats, which I'm an independent who voted Democratic. Do me this favor. Shut the f*** up. When you win, you get to say what you want to. When you lose, you need to shut the hell up. Oh, President Biden, they didn't get him out the race soon enough. Kamala didn't do this. We lost because we had no game plan. We still haven't solved the immigration problem, have no viable answers, never addressed inflation, bringing all these stupid stars out to rally the vote. What was that? Hey, I love Beyonce.
Oh, this guy.
What bringing her out? That ain't gonna make me vote a certain way. Cardi B. I like Cardi B. That ain't gonna make me vote a certain type of way. You guys lost because y'all stupid.
Oh, nothing else I can add to that. Charles Barkley, ladies and gentlemen, that has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your continued commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you'd like to support our show, we would love for you to do that. It's $5 a month. You can sign up at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Anything else, Nicole? Any closing?
Stay safe tonight.
Oh my gosh, don't blow away. And if I'm not here tomorrow, it's because I blew away and a house fell on top of me like the wicked witch I am. Right-wing bigot.
That's me. That's me. See you tomorrow.